It's Sunday night. The whistles have gone. And we are here for a bit of Relatively and a lot of football. It is my pleasure to introduce a non-sibling on the podcast, which is a great reminder to everyone that family, is beyond the traditional family. And I feel blessed to call lots of friends family and likewise family friends. But yeah, here I am with my sister Flo. Say hello, hi, Flo. Hello. And here I am with the one, the only, Sophie Lawson. How's it going, Sophie?
It's going fine, thanks. Thank you for having me here, despite my lack of Lloyd Hughes status.
Oh, no.
Everyone could be a Lloyd Hughes. Yeah, like I said. There's a lot of us, so
exactly.
There's room for more.
So we've got two Londoners in the house. Well, three original Londoners, and I'm calling in from New Orleans, as always, listener. Letting the Zoom do the work. How's everyone feeling? I know it's been a big weekend. Flo, you've been on your travels. Soph, you've been watching every single football match under the sun. How are we all doing?
Been better, but been worse too. So that's what I'll sum it up. I've just got weird Sunday night feeling, weird vibes, but I'm fine. The show goes on. Soph, how about you?
I mean, I've sat at my laptop for 2 days, so I'm exhausted.
Oh, well, look, we're all going to get through this together. It probably hasn't been a classic women's football weekend or semi-women's football weekend by some standards. But yeah, it was great to have the games in a more staggered way. All the FA Women's Championship was on the telly, which I appreciated. And yeah, let's get down to it. We're going to go in reverse chronological order. So the last WSL game to the first, and then we'll drop down to the championship, do a little couple of other business, and then we'll get out of here. So yeah, big one at the bottom, arguably the biggest game of the weekend. Birmingham City 1, Bristol City 1.
It was my favourite WSL game of the weekend. I thought some of the other games kind of lacked a bit of drama and were a bit too one-sided. So I appreciated the openness of this game. I do think you always kind of know what you're going to get with Birmingham, but Bristol City are kind of, you take you by surprise every week. You kind of never know which Bristol City might show up. And yeah, I think they will be disappointed not to get the win today, especially with so many good opportunities that I think they wasted. But it's still a point on the board and they're up to 10th. Maybe the result is better for West Ham and Villa because those two share the points rather than maybe one of them climbing further away. Bristol City will carry themselves through on vibes.
Sophie, who do you think is going to be happier with the point here, Carlo Ward or Matt Beard?
Neither of them. I think they're both going to look at it as points dropped, and they did both have chances. And it maybe not a classic, but certainly interesting to watch. But I think it's easy for both of them to say, well, we were targeting 3 points. We wanted 3 points. And you'll see it as an opportunity missed as the number of matches left to play does begin to dwindle.
Talked about it a bit last week about Matt Beard against Spurs, maybe risking more, playing more of a 4-4-2. We saw Abby Harrison and Ebony Salmon today, although Salmon kind of started on the left and then it looked like more of a 4-4-2 later on. Yana Daniels started at right back, was switched out in the second half, and she then moved to left midfield when Salmon went in up top. Did anything from either Bristol or Birmingham tactically surprise either of you two today? Do you feel like Carla Ward was risking it more or risking it less than Matt Beard, or do you think Matt Beard was trying to... Did you see anything that kind of showed maybe that they were really trying to push for those 3 points from either side?
I mean, they're both still working with relatively limited squads. I think there's only ever so much you can do when you've got a finite number of warm bodies.
Yeah, I think Bristol looked more attacking anyway in terms of wanting to win the game. I think Carla Ward, with what she's got, can't really be particularly proactive. It's like you're always setting yourself up to be on the back foot. And in all those scenarios, you've sort of got hope that you're going to nick something. Whereas with what Matt Beard has to play with, I think he can be a bit more offensive because he's got a lot more to work with than Carla Ward has.
Any players from either side jump out to either of you for a special mensch? I think Sarah Mayling is always such a joy to watch in that Birmingham side, and definitely a player who, when she was out on injury, I think you saw the whole team their levels drop off a little bit. She was great today. Hit the bar, or tipped onto the bar from Bagley, which ends up winning the corner, which ends up getting the goal for Birmingham. So not necessarily directly involved in anything, but always love watching Sarah Mayling. Anyone stand out for you two?
Ella Mastrantonio. Seen her a few times now. She's you know, not a young player, but you know, she's doing well in, you know, all things considered with Bristol. She's breaking some stuff up.
Warm body intact.
Exactly. It's always the first thing to make sure of.
No players stood out for Flo. All right, moving on to champions elect and the current holders at home. Chelsea getting it done against a very stubborn Aston Villa side, who probably at the end of the day won't be too disappointed with the result. Two Sam Kerr goals here. Chelsea 2, Aston Villa 0. Flo, we have maybe run out of superlatives for Sam Kerr and Frank Kirby, affectionately known as Kirby. But they were just fantastic again, and they make it look so easy. I think we have seen Chelsea struggle, or the only time we've ever really seen Chelsea lose this season is when they've made wholesale changes. But Emma Hayes made a lot of changes today. Great to see Hannah Blundell, which we talked about a lot about last week, and Jess Carter was back. But they look great, and especially in these two goals, you just see how, you know, maybe if you keep a couple of key players and then you do mass changes, you know, you can still be a fantastic side.
The only thing that people counted against Chelsea at the start of the season was, oh, how can you fit all these good players into one team? You know, that's going to be the real thing that Emma Hayes has to fight against. But it's been pretty easy, to be honest, quite quickly. And the squad is so huge that I think, yeah, you can get into trouble if you rotate too much, but obviously, when they do that, they don't change too much about the system. So I think everyone knows their roles quite well, and everyone knows how good Chelsea's squad is and how they can fill a pretty decent 11. But you know, like their second team is a good WSL team. So I think Emma Hayes has kind of beaten that conundrum that she was placed with this season, and I was happy to see Jess Carter playing nearly a full game, because she hasn't had a lot of opportunities in the WSL since she signed from Chelsea. And I know we were talking beforehand, before the podcast tonight, about how we wish she was, you know, a starting player at another WSL team where she could really show what she's made of. And ever since she moved to Chelsea, she's just kind of been like a squad backup who is basically stuck just playing in cup games. So it was nice to see her play a really big part today and kind of look like her old self. And Hannah Blundell, who we haven't seen much of since Marin Mjelde came back from injury. So yeah, it was kind of like a retro Chelsea performance, I guess, with some of those players coming into it. And that Sam Kerr header was phenomenal. Soph's laughing like she wants to say something. Fight back.
So I was just having this conversation with someone else, actually, about Kerr and her goals, and everyone who rubbished her when she first joined Chelsea. It was like, oh, she's out of her depth, she's rubbish, blah blah blah, blah, all that noise. And what I said was, in my response to this person when we were talking about it earlier during the match, was as good as Kerr is, and I'm not conceding that she's not a very, 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 very good player. I think part of her success this season, a big part of it, is the partnership she's got with Kirby. And it reminds me of the partnership she used to have with Nagasato in Chicago. And I think during that first season for her at Chelsea, she didn't look settled. She didn't look like she had that kind of partnership or those kind of rhythms with the other players in the team. So it's helped her settle. It's bedded her into the squad. And now you've got these two players who are just in sync and kind of riffing off each other and making each other better as well.
I feel like there were signs of that, though, between her and Beth England when she first joined. You know, when she first joined in January, and she actually, it took her a while to score, but she provided, I think, maybe 3 or 4 assists for Beth England. And she was really more of a provider until she got up and running with the goals. So I feel like there were signs of it with Beth England. And then obviously we had such a long break that probably didn't help her with her rhythm in getting settled, because she didn't play football for like 6 to 8 months, so that's not going to help anyone. Whereas now, yeah, she is in that form where she knows everyone a lot better, and Kirby is in such good form that obviously rubs off when your awareness of each other is so good. But I feel like maybe she could have found that if we'd seen more of her and Beth England together for longer.
I don't know, I kind of felt that as that, and before the curtailment, it did feel that sort of Beth England just before they signed Kerr as well, Beth England has kind of cemented herself as the main goal scorer or, you know, main attacking threat for Chelsea. And so, like, I think Kerr's first goal for Chelsea was in that drubbing in Boreham Wood. It was world-class goal. Oh, and also Kerr's first goal, which I think everyone was really happy about, but it was the worst finish of the day because everything else was so good. But it didn't necessarily feel like they were gelling and laying down sort of the type of blueprint prototype partnership that she has with Kirby right now. But, you know, that was about 27 years ago, so my memory is a little hazy. And Chelsea fans are always welcome to tell me I'm wrong. I mean, everyone's always welcome to tell me I'm wrong.
I want to ask you about Jessie Fleming, because I feel like Emma Hayes is sort of forcing a role on her, perhaps, that she doesn't necessarily want. I don't know where she fits into this side, because I think obviously a top acquisition and lots of people were fighting for her signature. But now they've got her, it's kind of like, ah, shit, what do we do with her? I don't know if you're feeling the same or you feel like there's an optimum position and way to play with her, but I feel like we're not seeing the best out of her. And she hasn't played in a ton of games, but today I felt like a really good opportunity for her, and the Conti Cup as well. And the Conti Cup, I thought she had a really good game, but I don't know. Today, maybe she didn't play as big a role as I thought she might.
She had a really good game in the Conti Cup. It was just sort of 1 point for the first half, whereas she was making all the runs on the left and Leighton was making all the runs on the right, and it just completely just destroyed. I mean, it was everything else going on the pitch as well. It didn't help Bristol when you just had that going on out wide as well. I don't know. I know that there was a lot of talk about Fleming sort of during her last year at university and how she was kind of fading for Canada a bit during that time, and how much people wanted to see a move to a professional team so that she could kick on with Canada as well, especially coming up to the Olympics. I think maybe over the last few years has had some problems with inconsistency, and part of that is where is she playing, how is she divvying up her time and stuff. But yeah, I'm not quite sure. That's necessarily the right role for her at Chelsea. But she is adaptable. You can play her in a few different positions and just try and find something that works. And sometimes it's just a bad day. Sometimes it's the right position but the wrong personnel. And I think she's still one that you just need to just do a bit of trial and error with and see what happens.
And it's hard as well when you come in with like such a big reputation. I feel like she's been playing for so long now, which is kind of ridiculous, that there's a lot of pressure coming into it when everyone's talking about you and you're expected to kind of be this change maker when there are lots of other people doing that as well in that team. Theo, please, over to you.
Oh, I was just going to kind of moving things over to Aston Villa before we become a Chelsea podcast. Weekly plug to go listen to Fran Kirby's Fight Club. I don't want to repeat myself, but I get very annoyed at Marcus Bignot, the way he sets up, like how unadventurous they've been since they made the change at manager. But I feel like, you know, I guess they lost 4-0 to Chelsea in his first game. They lose 2-0 today. Maybe that's a positive result. But can either of you tell me how Aston Villa have improved since he took over, and or how are they improving as we get to this final section of the season? Because I feel like every time I watch Aston Villa, every week, maybe bar a couple of amazing touches from Iwabuchi, I get really blue. And I feel like players like Anita Asante, who are having good seasons, as Mita Ale, who is one of my favourite young players, who's really emerged as a good player this season, they've both kind of dropped off the last few weeks. And I just worry that Bignot is not improving the players that he has, which in my opinion wasn't even necessarily one of the worst squads, maybe, you know, the fourth, eighth or ninth best squad in the league or something.
It does seem like damage limitation at the moment, and it's very negative. I mean, we were talking about the way that Carla Ward sets up Birmingham with what she's got to work with, which kind of makes a bit more sense, but there's just doesn't seem to be much of a game plan. They spend the entire game defending for their lives, which I guess makes sense when you're in this situation, when you're playing up against teams a lot better than you, fine. But it does seem like the setup is defend for your life, give the ball to Iwabuchi when you can and see what happens. And beyond that, I can't really say what more there is.
I was just thinking about Bingham's time when he was at Birmingham with David Parker, and how we think of Birmingham playing a very conservative style, but it worked for them because they had the players to, they always built from the back, and they had the young players always coming through the system, which Bignett had a big part in that as well. And they always played more sort of defensively, and then they could spring on the counter. But that was when they had Harrop and Carter in defence, and then they had Carney in the team, and they could do stuff.
They had more creative players, right?
But you also had, and it was an evener league at the time. And now, they played a back five today. I feel like we kind of look at, 2-0, that's not bad. They must have done a lot defensively. But Chelsea wholesale changes because they played midweek. They're playing midweek again. That's where their focus is. I think today was just get back to England, get the job done, bugger back off to Budapest. That's where the real work is.
I mean, Gemma Davies had a 4-0 win over Bristol City before she was sacked or removed from her position
demoted.
As head coach
demoted.
And just made a regular coach. Demoted,
yeah,
sorry.
I don't know if I would have demoted Gemma Davies.
No, me neither.
I'm trying to hint at that. And you're right, Soph. Like, hashtag these two games Gemma. Against West Ham, which we keep bringing up, I think are going to, at the end of the day, define everything. You get 4 points, maybe even you just get two draws, and that might be enough for Villa.
Those two games are going to be so fun.
Moving on, we won't spend too long on this one because it was probably the least competitive game. Well, that's not true. Arsenal Spurs was maybe slightly less competitive. But Brighton 0, Everton 5. Flo, you called it last week when you said Brighton's winning streak, 4 games on wins in a row, would come to an end. And whoa.
What a way to go.
Boy, did it come to an end. Yeah, I did not see this coming. I don't think anyone did. I blame the lack of Hope Pal visibility this week. No San Francisco Zoom backgrounds. Not enough fun videos. Not enough deep chats about vulnerability and changing your coaching style 20 years into your career. I think if we'd had more content, maybe we would have had more points on the board for Brighton. You know, to sum this one up, for those that didn't see it, Brighton have been amazing the last few weeks with everyone being on their best behaviour, working hard, playing as a team. In particular, Maya Letizia, Anissa Kagman and Emma Koivisto being the stars of the show. So today, listener, just imagine the opposite happened. Maya Letizia, Emma Koivisto and Anissa Kagman were pretty much involved or at fault for every single goal.
The week in which Maya Letizia has done tons of press and been named as like one of the next gen players to watch. She is an absolute stinker.
You know, who's only 18, 19 and is going to go very, very far. But she was really at fault today. Hayley Rasso gets a hat trick and also won the penalty. And it's one of those classics. Jump in, Flo or Soph, if you have an opinion on this. But like, when the keeper rushes out and fouls a player because the defender thinks the keeper's going to go and get it, claim the ball, that is, whose fault is it? Because Maya Letizia basically just stops running and puts her hands up and goes like, all right, come on, Megan, this one's yours. But if you're playing with Hayley Rasso, she's going to sniff that blood. She's going to smell that blood and go for it. So would you blame Maya Letizia for letting the ball run? Or do you think Walsh maybe should have had it?
I think we need to communicate.
Yeah, you're right.
Communication
is key.
I think it's funny because of all the teams that are probably perfectly set up to destroy Brighton, Everton's probably one of them, right? Because they have that terrier, Rasso, and she's going to put pressure on players who have been coasting, I think, for a couple of weeks and feeling maybe a little bit too confident.
It reminds me a little bit of stuff we've all said about Tottenham Hotspur this year. Spurs have a funny way of making not too many errors, but big errors, as Flo alluded to with the penalty chat last time out. And Brighton basically pulled a Spurs today. I think they had 6 shots on goal and 5 of them went in. Big errors by players like Letizia and Koivisto led to goals. Anissa Kagman was playing at left midfield today, which I think Hope Powell got her set up a little bit wrong because Everton are so good on the wings. You need players that are going to track back. I think, you know, Hope Pal said it in a post-match conference, we were too relaxed.
That's what I mean, too big for their boots. Relaxed. Against a team that you do not want to relax against.
Well, no, especially on the wings. And I think, yeah, I think a lot of people, myself included, was really excited to see Emslie and Rasa go up against Letizia and Koivisto. But the fullbacks today for Brighton definitely lost their duels. And we haven't really seen too much of that this year. So I think you can forgive them. And I kind of have confidence Brighton against the teams they should take care of business will take care of business. But against a very good, pumped up, thirsty Everton side, it was just a bit of a it was a kind of cocktail that everything could go wrong, did go wrong. But I wouldn't actually say Brighton were totally dreadful today.
I'd say it's almost quite karmic for how they beat Spurs, because they yes, sort of came so yes. close to conceding, and then they countered for the opener, and it was a bizarre match to watch. And if you watch it, you're like, how on earth did they get 3 points? So I think maybe a little bit of karmic retribution out there. I don't know. I'm a big Hayley Raso fan.
Oh yeah, fantastic player.
I think she was the when we ended up with half the Australian team joining WSL, when everyone was going, oh my god, Sam Kerr's coming here, I was like, oh, Hayley Raso's coming here. She was one of the ones I was most looking forward to seeing, and she's not really been that consistent in her starts or even where Kirk's played her, but I do just enjoy watching her thrive, because she's a tricky little player. I mean, she's a bit of a git as well on the pitch.
Mo Wald was back fit today, so she was playing at right mid, not right back. So I think that touches on what you were saying, in that she's mucked in at other positions. She's done the dirty work. She's been a team player, and today she was kind of back at her preferred position as a winger.
I just think also she stands out because of her work rate, right? She's that player you want because she gives 110% in that cliche way every single game. Like, she is one of the hardest working players on the pitch, and that's something that you want to be able to guarantee in your team no matter what. So yeah, she's such a good addition to that side.
All right, and moving on to the next game, more karmic distribution, in the words of Sophie Lawson. Man City 1, Reading 0. What a finish from Chloe Kelly, set up with an outstanding run that tore through four different Reading players, with Lauren Hemp getting the assist on that one. You know, this game was a funny one. This is one of the few games on Saturday we were all watching at the same time, because Flo was traveling up to Manchester. I was running around a bit. But we were all kind of logged on this one, which was really fun. Flo, I know you were loving Jane Ludlow's comms. But what I loved about this was that the narrative was built in my head for early season Gareth Taylor letting, you know, profligate City, wasting chances, not getting taken care of business. And then this goal goes in, and then suddenly, I'm looking up how many times the City snatched points, and like, they're the kings of the last minute, and, you know, absolute, they'll never bottle it. Like, these are going to be title champions. So it was a funny game for me, because I felt like I flipped and flopped, and basically my bias from the result wrote whatever narrative I wanted to, because everything at the end of the day is meaningless. What were your takeaways from this game?
I actually watched it at the same time as Montpellier PSG, and the first time that day, when just everything was happening for 90 minutes, and I could not pick a screen to focus on, because both were quite frantic. But no, it was a really, really fun game, from what I can remember of it. City had like a chance to like to score into an open goal twice in the first half.
Georgia Stanway's one stands out. Yeah. I think she was 3 yards out, and she just opens up her left foot a little bit too much, and it kind of craters wide.
I think we saw like a reaction of her reaction. We saw a replay of her reaction to that goal, and it was that kind of damn. But you know what? We're going to have more chances. We're going to score. And then the match ticks on, and Reading are doing a Reading. And, you know, if Reading concede twice, they usually score twice. And if they score twice, then they have to concede twice. So it's like, oh, is it going to be a 0-0? Is that basically the title race over? And, yeah, I don't know. It wasn't the best seat performance. It wasn't the best seat performance midweek either. I think maybe that factors in, is travelling and, you know, having to sort of set yourself up for two very different oppositions. I don't know. Lauren Hemp, again, is just incredible. Should just always be in every England squad, every Team GB squad, every City squad. Yeah.
Yeah, there's so many players who I'm just hoping, I'm like, please carry on this form for the home Euros next year. I mean, to have her and Kirby continuing how they're playing now would just be insane. I think, Yeah, I think last night City got down and dirty when they needed to at a critical moment, and they spent the first couple of weeks of the season struggling to do that. And I think not playing for so long is a big factor. I think having a new manager is a big factor. But now they were in their rhythm and they've got to this point in the season, they've been on a really good run. I think that's why you can count on them pulling out those moments, and with players like Kemp in such good form, to almost bail them out at that moment. So it's weird because I did think at one point it was going to go the way of that game at the Majeski. That was 1-1, but City had like 20 shots, and Grace Maloney had a really good game that game, and Reading defended really well and scored early. And I thought we might have a similar kind of vibe where Reading were just going to be really solid, try and have a few opportunities on the counter, but never quite get anything killer and get a really important point that could have huge ramifications for the title race. And then City just kind of pull out that magic something, which has really kind of summed up the last couple of weeks for them. And yeah, they just got it done. And it's good because it does keep that excitement at the top of the table going. Otherwise, it could have kind of killed that quite quickly. So at least we've got something to kind of clutch onto in the title race, because you don't want everything to just now be focused on who's going to get relegated. You've still got a bit of something to be interested in. Even though Chelsea will probably still win the league, it's still a bit of fun, especially with that game still to play at the Academy Stadium, whatever it's called. CFA, which could be moved because of the Champions League semi-finals. But that is going to be a crazy game when it happens.
Should we talk about Rose Lavelle, because she got a rare start?
Yeah.
And a start in a favoured position as well.
Yeah, there was a lot of chat on the comms between Ludlow and Vicky Sparks about Lavelle, and Vicky Sparks asking Jane Ludlow why she thought that Lavelle would be struggling. I think so much of it is positioning. I think Gareth Taylor's kind of chucked her in various different spots, none of them really being ideal for her. And I think Ludlow was focusing a lot on kind of moving abroad and the cultural side of things. But I don't really think it's that. I think it is more the positioning and the fact that, you know, lots of people who know more about NWSL than I do have talked about the fact that she has struggled for form and fitness in the NWSL, and maybe we should have seen this coming a little bit. So, thoughts?
Well, I just want to say first and foremost, I absolutely abhor English comms being like, oh, well, yeah, these players are coming in and they've never had to been playing a physical league before. It's a big culture shock. And they're talking about like Sam Mewis after she's just won the World Cup.
I do think I'm gonna fight back, because I do think the reason Mewis flourishes is because she's a monster and she bashes people out of the way. And I think Lavelle is a more fragile player. And I do think the WSL is more physical than the NWSL.
But I don't think
that's the reason Lavelle's not doing well. But I do think it's part of it.
She is made of breadsticks.
Yeah, she is. She's made of biscuits.
But like, she knows that she's going to get kicked and tackled from God knows every angle. When she plays for the US, she's fine with it. I mean, yeah. I'm sure it hurts, but you know,
she's good at riding a challenge.
She's intelligent.
Yeah.
That's always been one of her strengths. It's her technical ability and the fact that she is clever in what she does. You know, it's just, we need to see it at City, because we saw it a little bit for the US, that she believes. But like, Gareth, work out how to get it out of her, please. Mm. But you can't say these players coming from NWSL are not used to the physical nature of WSL. I had that a lot with Sam Kerr when she first came in. I was like, you've never watched an NWSL game then.
So if you're saying it's coming from Sam Kerr or coming from commentators?
From commentators. Kerr did mention, she's like, oh, it's a bit rough over here.
Well, that was after Grace Maloney practically kind of split her in half on her debut. So no wonder.
Welcome to England.
North London Derby, kind of a big deal in a big empty stadium. This one finished Tottenham 0, Arsenal 3, from Caitlin Ford, Miedemar and Katie McCabe. Any takeaways from this one? Great to see Maritz getting a run out at right back. I thought had a really good game for Arsenal. I don't know who stood out for you.
I mean, it's Arsenal versus Spurs, and it's still Spurs finding their feet in WSL and who they are under Skinner, and the fact that they just are missing so many pieces, that they're just not a cogent team, really, for me. You know, you could play it wherever you want. Arsenal are on paper the better team, and they tend to show it. But I feel like when Skinner first came in, you obviously have... You've got the bounce of a new manager. Players look... I'm not going to say the players looked happier, because I can't sort of attest to any of that. But they were playing different systems, and it seemed to all kind of work. And they put on a nice little run. They had that first 20-minute period against Chelsea at King's Meadow, which was absolutely incredible.
Really impressive, yeah.
But we've seen nothing of that since. They've been making just the most rudimentary sick mistakes. So the type of mistakes that Brighton were getting heavily punished for before they became Koivisto FC.
Hey, there it is.
But one thing that stood out from the match yesterday wasn't actually the match. It was a tweet from Juan Amoros. I don't know if you saw this. It was, yes. Wow, sometimes when you take the heart away from somewhere, it shows and it hurts.
That was very interesting. And after I quote tweeted it with side eye emojis, he started following me, which I found even more interesting. I was like, okay, Juan, guess someone wants to catch an eye on my shady tweet. I think it goes back to what I always think with a lot of teams in the WSL, is you can get quite far with just vibes and heart over actually playing good football. And I think Bristol City is a key part of that. I think Birmingham City's Carlo Ward has kind of ridden on that for a fair chunk of their season. And I think you're seeing the lack of vibes and heart from West Ham, and that being their downfall, and also not being able to score goals, which is obviously a much more important thing when you're, you know, fighting relegation. But Aston Villa, zero vibes and heart. And I think Juan has a point when he talks about the lack of heart in this Spurs team, because, God, they just look a bit sad, don't they? And it's a difficult task coming up against Arsenal. So, you know, there was probably only ever going to be one winner anyway. And I think the hype that goes with this derby is never going to play into Spurs' hands. I think they need to de-hype this fixture, because I think putting the pressure of so much pre-match hoo-ha about it, moving it to the new Spurs stadium when you're not even going to have fans, I just don't know if any of that played into their favour. I think that was actually a bad idea in terms of Spurs getting a good result. Like, probably a fun moment for the players, but they had that last season anyway. You know, some of them are new. Did they need to do that? I just don't know if that was the best idea in the world.
I mean, like, I'm more than happy for Spurs to play at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. I think it's the fun name it's got now. If you say fuck it, we're going to play there once a season, every season, because then that does start to like affect positive change. And the Hive pitch isn't always great. They had a lot of issues last season, and they sorted out sort of the drainage problems, but Barnet play on it, London Bees play on it, Spurs play on it. It's not lovely and plush all the time. But it is funny, because Arsenal over the years have played at the Hive as well as their home ground. So there is, when it comes to those two, they are really sharing at the same patch of turf. You know, that is a proper derby, but yeah, it's all just a bit weird. And then let's play in a big stadium with no fans.
No, I was also just going to say, going back to, I guess, a more tactical thing, less heart and vibes, although I think that does play a big part, there's a constant experimentation with Skinner. And I was talking about it on the train home with Jesse JPH about this constant playing around to see what happens. And we talked about the fact that they don't have a proper striker, a reliable WSL striker. So that's obviously a very big issue. But then with what they do have, they keep moving them around. And I don't think you can also play Ian and Dean, both of them together. I think it's kind of got to be one or the other, to be honest. And I think they punish themselves when they play both of them and then keep moving them around. Jesse and I talked about that a lot yesterday. So yeah, it's kind of why do you keep moving all these players? What are you doing?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think that's what's really held back development from the Spurs' point of view. I know Percival, I think, has an injury at the moment, been their best player of the season. Even when her and Kit Graham, and sometimes even there was a minute where Jess Nance was doing it, they kind of became a more vicious, feisty, front foot forward, let's press, let's be more direct, and try and capitalize on errors from open play when, before Sarri Vorma got injured, the only way they could score was from set pieces. So I think there was a minute where it felt like Rhianne Skinner, through injury or like you said, from just rotation, landed on a good formula, but she didn't stick to it. And maybe part of that is because you can't play the same way against every team. But I do think bringing Rhianna Dean in, who's more of a kind of up top, hold up player, hasn't really worked. I still think everything good for Spurs happens through Kit Graham. The amazing Zinsberger triple save, Spurs doing Spurs things and missing chances you wouldn't think anyone else could miss, kind of comes from Kit Graham being brilliant. But I really feel like this team is, yeah, too much rotation, not enough like total game plan from Skinner. And I think even players who started the season looking integral have looked a little bit lost. Alana Kennedy, you know, we talked maybe too much about physicality, but she was a player who looked really ready for the physicality of the WSL. And I think she's, you know, kind of dropped her level a little bit. And I texted you two during the game, this kind of weird thing, which I don't want to get too deep into because otherwise we just keep repeating ourselves. But the way they place Alana Kennedy on corners is so odd. She's always standing on her own with no one around her, which maybe is because the other team doesn't want to cross to that area. But it just doesn't make any sense to me to have your best aerial threat not marking anyone.
There's just a lot that Spurs do that doesn't make sense to me.
Well, that's a good time to move on. Flo, I want to set you up because you were there at Old Trafford. But on that note, Manchester United did beat West Ham 2-0. Lauren James getting the first ever goal at Old Trafford.
Trumpets.
Very excited to hear. Kristen Press with maybe one of the best goals of the weekend. And then West Ham finished with 10 players after Vetterlin was sent off for a second yellow in the 77th minute. Maybe you could blame Man United for being poor in possession. Amy Turner in particular seems to have a bit of a chronic ball giving away at the moment. Mary Earps did a little bit of that yesterday. But I actually thought this was Longhurst and Brinsdorter's best games since Ollie Harder took over at turning over possession in the middle of the pitch. And I don't think West Ham were great, but they had 5 shots on goal. And I went back and watched it. And I think 3 or 4 of those come from turnovers. Like I said, I think Amy Turner and Mary Earps and Millie Turner don't do great in possession. But I do think Longhurst and Brinsdorter were really, really on it today. Yesterday. And maybe you're seeing that they can replace a player like Cho in regards to having a little bit of bite and playing in that style that Ollie Harder wants them to.
Yeah, I think they were wasteful, which is, sums them up the whole entire season, whether it's Matt Beard's West Ham or Ollie Harder's West Ham. They're so wasteful. And I guess the difference now is Ollie Harder's got them working so hard. They look very fit and athletic. And yeah, every player is fighting and hunting for the ball. But when they do get the ball, they waste it. I mean, Brynjar's daughter had 3 good chances yesterday, and she fluffed all of them. She also hasn't played a lot of football over the last few years, so I think was a surprise anyway to maybe be at West Ham, and I don't think she's going to be the sort of player who's going to like save your season. Martha Thomas, who's shown better signs of her ability this season, is
she needs
a season in the championship to just bag like 20 goals to get a ton of confidence, because she is lacking in that final finish at the moment. And I think I disagree with you in terms of, I think West Ham's opportunities yesterday actually just came from Man United making a bunch of mistakes. It's not like the West Ham I saw against Chelsea, where I actually think they fought to win the ball back a lot. It was United just giving away possession three or four times just outside their own box and putting themselves under a huge amount of pressure and then getting away with it every time. And I think United were so lucky, and Casey Stoney said it was one of the worst first half she's seen from them this season, and she wasn't even that kind of happy about the win, to be honest. She was just so pissed off with the first half and how they went about it.
Has Casey Stoney, and I mean this with zero shade to her, has Casey Stoney ever been happy after a Man U result, whether it's a win, loss or draw?
I think I have. I know she does. She is a hard taskmaster, is probably a polite way to say it. But I have seen her happy. I think she was happy about the Arsenal win. earlier in the season. But yeah, she wasn't happy yesterday. And yeah, I mean, I feel for West Ham. Ollie Harder was tearing the hair that he doesn't have out on the sidelines because...
Should we get him a wig? So can...
It was so hard to watch. And they are so frustrating to watch now because you're like, oh, you're working so hard, but you're getting absolutely nowhere. Bryn Jahrestøtter, I found very frustrating to watch yesterday because...
It's funny because I thought it was our best game.
It was
in
her
West
best
Ham,
game, but she had so many good opportunities. Standards. And I was like, oh, what are you doing? Just score, please.
It felt a lot like they weren't expecting the opportunities. Yeah. So as soon as they started getting advanced, they were passing the ball with no real purpose. And they were just trying to get rid of it and taking snapshots instead of being a little more.
Yeah. And Kenza Dali was off yesterday with all her set piece deliveries. She didn't have a great game. And Ollie Harder was getting understandably really frustrated because every single time West Ham won a free kick, they would just dink some random ball into touch pretty much like they were playing rugby. I was like, what are you doing? You know, would never get a threatening ball into the box, whether it was a corner or a free kick. It was just a wasteful afternoon, and it must be they're a very frustrating team to manage, West Ham. If it doesn't matter if it's Matt Beard or Harder, it's just constant, like, God, I'd be going crazy if I was managing that side. The spirit of the team was better than it was under Matt Beard. There were smiles, there were laughter, there was good chemistry. And I saw signs of that yesterday as well. But I am worried about them. And I'm worried about the mentality of the players as well, because I just think they must be feeling really low.
We watch football sometimes to find joy, magic, amazing decision-making, technical skill. So, Flo, I want to set you up for the Kristen Press goal and the Jackie Cronin assist.
Kristen Press had some opportunities in the first half that she was wasteful with, and in the second half she scored a really good goal, and she could have I can't remember who it was, that moment after Press's goal, Gronin plays in another very good pass, and I don't know if it was Ella Toon or Staniforth or someone who was one-on-one with the goalie and fluffed that shot, but Gronin should have had a second assist, really.
What was it like in the stadium at that moment?
Oh, well, it was an absolute nightmare getting to the stadium. If you want to get to relatively logistics, it took me 25 minutes to get from, like, arriving to Old Trafford into my seat. It was just, like, layer upon layer of, like, bureaucratic security nonsense. I was, like, sweating by the time I got in. There was, like, I had to, like, trek to get to the first, like, entry point, then trek to get to the next one, temperature and accreditation, then trek to get to the next entrance, temperature again, then a bag search, then another stop where you basically go through, like, an airport security check, take everything out of your pockets, get your temperature done again, then get to another entrance where you got to go up the stairs to the media room. I was like, for God's sake. But, yes, it was... Old Trafford is a really amazing football stadium in terms of, like, visually, you're like, wow, this is Old Trafford, this is iconic. But then to go, I guess, onto what we touched on earlier and what kind of Sophie touched on in her piece is kind of like, what's the point a little bit? Because also the last minuteness of this Old Trafford move just made it seem like an afterthought. And, you know, Sony touched on, like, the TV element of that, the fact that MUTV had already streamed their maximum allowance of games. Yeah, it just felt a little rushed. Like, I appreciate the things that United went in terms of, like, the changing room for the players looked super cool, and, like, the Man United players certainly, like, really relished that moment, and, like, all the West Ham players as well were, like, taking pictures, and Ollie Harder afterwards was like, I never dreamed as a boy in New Zealand that I would ever get to come and coach here. This is like a dream come true. So for a lot of people, it was a seriously incredible moment. And I'm like, oh, that's sweet and that's nice. But then there's still something that makes me feel a little bit like, or nasty taste in the mouth where you're like, but it was kind of last minute. Like, was this ever the intention? They kind of just, like, looked at the diaries and were like, oh, should we do this? And then we're like, okay, yeah, we will. And I do hope it's kind of like the start of something bigger, a bit like Sophie said, with it being a regular thing and not just a sort of one-off that they've thrown to them last minute because it kind of worked out for the best. Because I think United are onto something with their project. And they've obviously given Casey Stoney a lot of financial backing and a lot of support, but you still feel like you don't want it to be like a flash of what could happen with Liverpool. Do you know I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, Stoney said, you know, it was a bit of a trick, you know, because he gets people off their backs. She said last year, it's an expensive thing to put a match on at Old Trafford with fans. And no fans, so that's expensive.
Bargain.
But as much as I'm happy for the players, because there are a lot of Man United fans in that team as well, and playing Old Trafford, it must have been incredible. But even if you say, well, there's no fans, their family's not there, their friends aren't there.
Yeah, it's true.
It feels so hollow. So you've got this, oh my God, you know, it's got the cool Old Trafford, and you don't. You've got your team there to celebrate with, but there's not the people you care about sharing that moment, and there's not the fans roaring you on. That's kind of where I'm at with that, as someone who's never played football and doesn't have an athlete's mentality. So I can only give you that side.
No, I think you're totally right. And I saw that, seeing so many of the social media posts from the United players afterwards was really emotional, because for so many of them, like, it has been a childhood dream. And I completely agree with you, to not have your family around to share that moment. And I mentioned before, Amy Palmer, who was, I heard on a podcast, and talking about the Continental Cup final, and like how it kind of felt a bit flat because, you know, she'd made a major final and none of her family could come watch her. And like, it was kind of didn't necessarily feel like a really special moment. And I think that is a massive part of it. And I just hope they haven't kind of got away with one here. I did ask Casey Stoney, like, you know, have you had chats yet about when the next one is? And she kind of said, you know, like, I'm like, trust me, this won't be the last that you've heard of this, kind of like, I'm already on it. And she said quite consistently that she is constantly battering, like, banging on their door, asking for stuff, and she certainly won't stop. I would like to see more of it, because it'd be great to see that with fans, especially like United fans, who, you know, we know are just the most kind of vocal and dedicated supporters for their team.
Sophie, where can we find that article if a listener would want to go and read it?
It is on SB Nation's women's football subsite, I guess it's called, is all4xi.com, and are we flowing about somewhere?
Go find it floating about. Always brilliant. Steph Yang is running that site, and a few others.
There is phenomenal content that goes up by some journalists and some bloggers across the US, and some really underrated voices.
Best in the game. Quick drop down then to the FA Women's Championship. Listener, we wish we had more time. We have slightly overrun here, so not as much attention as we would have liked, considering we got to watch a lot of these games. What jumped out to you? I'm going to go through the results, and then we'll just kind of pick the bones of some of the highlights. Durham won, Sheffield United won at the top. Leicester getting a 2-0 win over Coventry, making their lead at the top 5 points over Durham, who did drop the point against Sheffield. Lewis got a 2-1 win over London Bees, finishing the month of March unbeaten. Lewis coming into some really great late season form. London City Lionesses 0-0 with Charlton, and Liverpool 1-1 with Blackburn. So yeah, not necessarily a classic weekend in the FA Women's Championship, but it was great to watch a little bit more of these teams. Sophie, what were your takeaways?
I keep hearing a lot of good stuff about Leicester, and they're the best in the league. But from what every time I see them, I'm left feeling a little bit flat with them. I think if they kind of keep on in this form, if they get promoted, when they get promoted, they need to change a lot, otherwise they are going to get eaten alive in WSL. I mean, what we've seen from Villa this season, I think Leicester are not as good as Villa were this time last year, although this time last year we were in a pandemic, so no one was that great. And Lewis has been having a really cracking season actually overall, and Liverpool dropping points to Blackburn whilst looking a lot like a championship team.
Yeah, I mean, Liverpool just get more worrying by the week, to be honest. With the quality of players they have, you're just like, what is going on there? The search for their manager continues. I think we're in like month three of that. And they either didn't get...
We are into the next process, so.
Yeah, we're in like month three and stage two or whatever. It's just like... I know they're probably trying to tease it out, because, like, what's the point in appointing someone now, because you've not got much to work with in terms of the end of the season. But at the same time, I'm worried about the lack of candidates that might have applied for that job, even though I know Emma Saunders tweeted saying they had a ridiculous number of candidates. So apparently, according to them, it was a really popular job, but it does seem like you're taking on a really poisoned chalice there. But yeah, it's a funny one with Leicester. I will be really interested to see what happens when they go up. They are one win away from promotion now, so it looks kind of inevitable. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how players like Tash Flint, with an interesting reputation, someone who was kind of highlighted as the, well, you know, the next big thing in a way, highly rated young player, and kind of went on a weird journey. And now has an opportunity to play in the WSL again. And I'm really intrigued to see what happens and how she takes that opportunity. And she's been bagging in goals for fun this season. And it'll just be really interesting to see how they match up. And like Sophie said, Villa, I don't think, made enough changes when they came up. I think they were extremely naive. And we saw that from the very first game that they played against Man City, where they thought that they would have enough quality to play the way they want to play and weren't willing to adapt and adjust. And then it got them in a mess that this is what we're seeing now, because they are damage limitation. And it'll be interesting to see Leicester's approach on how they want to play, because I do think you have to make some realistic adjustments. You have to, in some ways, be true to your identity and how you play football, but you can't be stupid. And I think this will be always the conundrum that teams coming up from the Championship have.
This stuff has changed over the years with the professionalism in WSL, but the way Reading did it, I think, is maybe not the best way, but a very good way. The first year was very quite negative, and it was sort of just a win over Donny Bells that really saw them not get relegated. But then they kind of just built year on year on year.
Yeah, Leicester, Tash Flint scored two more today, 14 goals now for her. Big shout out to Jonathan Morgan, getting 11 wins on the bounce for the Foxes, which breaks the record in the for the FA Women's Championship, best in Man United and Aston Villa. So, you know, this is one of the best women's championship sides of all time. Paige Bailey-Gale also did her MCL midweek and will be out for the rest of the season. So if she stays at Leicester, or I think she's got quality to go anywhere, you know, in the upper sides of the WSL, I think she's a great player. It'd be interesting to see what happens with her in the summer. I think, shout out, yeah, Lewis have been really, really good, especially since Imaton signed. She didn't score today, but was just everywhere in the goal mouth. Such a poacher, such a smart player, knows where the ball's going to drop and can just kind of, seems like they can nick a goal out of anything. And London Bees were really good value today as well. A player I've really enjoyed watching, and I'm almost, you know, preparing for next year's FA Women's Championship, is Courtney Sweetman-Kirk. She's so good.
And she's also having a flourishing media career. She's doing loads of commentary with TalkSport. And I quite like the way she's balancing both and having a good season, because I feel like a lot of players, they get to a certain point where they like kind of choose one or the other. But she's actually really managing to kind of like excel in both this season. And I think it's, yeah, something that's working for her. So good to see.
Get you a player who can do both.
And I also love it when women players commentate on men's football, which is what she's doing, which I think is good, because I think so many just get stuck working in the women's game. And I think Karen Carney's really started that trend. And I think Courtney Sweetman-Kirk is doing so well with what she's doing as well.
Yeah, she scored a goal today, could add a hat trick. So many chances for Sheffield United, who I think, you know, this is very maybe an ignorant thing to say, but I really think Sheffield United could win the FA Women's Championship next season. I think they've just got, they're playing some of the best football.
I know, I'm worried they're going to be ongoing like a journey of being like the bridesmaid and never the bride for forever. But
big bridesmaid energy, but they're really fun to watch. And yeah, Sweetman-Kirk had a great goal against Lewis the other week and another good one today. And to be honest, she should have had a hat trick. And I know, you know, she's got previous season scoring goals in the WSL for fun. Like, she's obviously a good player. But yeah, just really good to see her thriving, and gives you something to look out for if you ever do find yourself checking in on Sheffield United. Quick whip around then. I'm going to ask for a goal, player, a moment of the weekend, and then we're going to get the hell out of here. Flo, you kick us off.
Goal, I'm going Kristen Press, because I think it's always great to see a player.
What noise did you make? What noise?
No,
did
that
you
was
make?
Oh, that was for the Jackie Gronin pass. It was like,
yeah, well, the same goal. All right.
No,
and the player.
Listeners don't. That's on my ASMR podcast. Yeah, I just think it's good to see a player with a big reputation kind of match up to that, because that's all people seem to talk about with players with names and trophies. The next one's got a moment of the weekend, player of the weekend. So either. They're kind of wrapped up in the same one. So Lauren James, moment of the weekend, historic moment for Man United women. And I just think, you know, she's a player that everyone's talking about. So you, when someone is everyone talking about them, it's nice to see them do well. And that was my player of the weekend as well, Lauren James. I actually think she needed more of the ball yesterday. She didn't get enough of it. And I think she should have spent most of the game with the ball. But she's still working her way back to full fitness as well. So Lord knows how good she's going to be come the end of the season.
Sophie?
Viv's goal, I think, was just nice.
Volley.
Very nice volley. Moment was Lauren Hemp setting up Chloe Kelly, or Lauren Hemp just murdering, just absolutely ruthlessly killing
four
a few
innocent women.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, Lauren Hemp took her around her flat at the halftime on FA Player as well. So she was very busy. She was giving us a little halftime show as well.
She was with Dion Dublin doing a fully cash in, whatever that his show is. Not Cash in the Attic, but you know what I mean. Homes Under the Hammer.
Anyway, Sophie, back to your highlights.
I just thought Lauren James had a great game. She's, as you said, she's still coming back from injury. She's not 100% yet, but she showed more maturity in her game. There are a lot of nice quotes from Casey Stoney after the match about a little bit more of the virtuosity in the complete game she's got. So I think it was a good game for her.
I'm going to diversify our goal player and moment section by going goal from the FA Women's Championship, Sophie Quirk's lovely curler for London Bees against Lewis. Go and find it. Absolutely cracking goal. Great finish. She was great all game, Sophie Quirk. Player, it's got to be Hayley Rasso. 3 goals and an assist. Sniffing out everything today. Thirsty, unbelievable performance from Hayley. But here we go, going to bring in a new league, the NCAA ACC. Moment of the weekend was Ruby Grant, 18 years old, from London, getting a hat-trick for the University of North Carolina. Best bit, the reason it was the moment of the weekend is because she also helped assist Brianna Pinto, number 3 overall pick in the NWSL, who also got a hat-trick, 2 hat-tricks, 7-0 win for UNC, and Ruby Grant and Brianna Pinto are roommates. So have some of that. 2 hat-tricks, 2 roommates. That's what I love to see. That's the moment of the weekend. Sophie, you look kind of surprised, kind of impressed. Like, you didn't need all that info, but you're glad it's there.
Very glad it's there.
Very glad it's there. All right, well, look, Sophie, thank you so much for coming on. This was a big, as you can, you know, we're all a bit tired. It's been a lot of football. We needed a bit of help. So, yeah, thank you so much. Where can people find you?
Well, like most people, the last year I've just been sat at home. So if they want to...
There you go. Go out and find her.
Metline, somewhere. No, I am...
Somewhere on the Metline.
On Twitter, @Lawson_SV. And that's probably the easiest place of finding me. I will be tweeting out about women's football, the endless redecoration of my home, probably cats, that type of thing. So feel free.
It's good content. It's
hugely great content.
It divides people. It's marmite content.
Dividing people and then bringing them back together. That's what we're about. Look, everyone can be family and football is family. And that's what we love so much about talking about it and getting people on. So yeah, so thanks so much for coming on. It's such a pleasure to meet you in this format. You're one of my favorite people to follow, and it's been great reading your articles again as well. So yeah, lots of love. And Flo, Soph, everyone, go get some sleep, listener. If you're about to go to bed, good night. If you listen to this in the morning, hey, have a great day. All right, see you later.